When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. I'm Jim Chapman. Unfortunately, Woody cannot make it today, and actually this is my fault, not Woody's fault. Schedules got crazy this week, and Woody did ask me to get with him on recording this episode, and to be honest, it was so busy in here that I just could not make the time to get both of us in the same place at the same time. I was out of the office a lot this week. So I'm going to be solo today, and we're going to continue that hurricane series that we've been discussing. And the last time that we left you, we were talking about Camp Amtrak. We're going to move on today to Washington Correctional Institute, and that's in Washington Parish, and they had some struggles with Hurricane Katrina as well. I'm going to tell you about that. And they didn't have plans for a Category 3 or 4 hurricane in Washington Correctional. However, the warden there, Warden Miller, pointed out that it was mentally helpful for the prison that they had thought through potential problems like train derailment. So they have a lot of trains that run through Washington Parish, and they were concerned that the wind would blow those trains over. And it's something that you don't really think about a whole lot. When you deal with hurricanes, you know, they're more apt to blow over and derail in a situation like that, no matter that they're heavy. That wind blowing so hard will definitely blow them over. So staff, they attempted to take reasonable steps to prepare for the hurricane, although they afterwards realized they had not been able to begin to contemplate the extent of the damage that they would face. Most of the prison buildings have flat roofs, and they're covered with small rocks. All the prison vehicles, they were moved away from those buildings to protect them from those flying rocks that they would likely have during a hurricane. Trucks were preloaded with chainsaws ready to clear roads and all those sorts of things after the hurricane passed. And they boarded up the windows, or if they couldn't completely board them up, they would tape them. And that, y'all, when hurricanes come, a lot of people will tape windows that they can't board up. And it's just to keep that glass from flying everywhere. It'll just kind of crack and fall on the ground. I know that sounds kind of morbid, but that's the facts. And most other traditional hurricane precautions they took. So they were preparing for it as best they could. Now, on Monday morning of the week that Katrina hit, WCI, Washington Correctional, it was hit with the brunt force for about 3 or 4 hours, maximum sustained winds, right? They didn't even attempt to feed breakfast that morning, and instead they fed inmates for the first time at 1 o'clock p.m. that day, and the damage to the institution and the area surrounding the institution, they described as a 40-mile-wide tornado. It was horrible. At that particular prison, some interior fences were down. One perimeter fence had a section broken. That's not good in prison, right? All communications were down, as was water and power. So they had no power, no phones, no water, and the fences were down on the perimeter of the prison. And even an interior fence was down, a Sallyport fence, if you will. Not good when you're in prison. Some HVAC systems were blown completely off the roofs of the building. These air conditioner, giant boxy air conditioner systems just blown completely off the roofs. And they had natural gas in a lot of places in this prison, and they had a lot of gas leaks after Katrina's brunt force went through that prison. The staff had to find appropriate utility shutoff valves and cut that natural gas off even before the storm had passed. So during the storm, of course, these issues occur, and they had to go during the storm and start just shutting off valves. Otherwise, the prison could have literally blown up. Now, some of the prison buildings had some pretty serious roof damage. There were trees down everywhere, and the road into the prison was impassable because of all the trees that had fell. You've heard Woody talk about when he was a police officer with the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office during these hurricanes. The one thing they made sure they had in their car was a chainsaw and gas. And that's because you're going to have trees down everywhere. So the Warden Miller, he said that throughout the crisis, the employees, they were great. And the inmate population, they were pretty well behaved and they were cooperative. The staff that were on duty when the hurricane hit worked about 25 hours straight and then went back to work. They sent them home and they came back 24 hours later. So they had like two shifts running. Approximately 12 WCI employees lost their houses entirely. And again, you don't think about that when these hurricanes hit, but all of these staffs of these prisons, they live, you know, may not be necessarily like Angola where they live on the property, but they're in close proximity. And so they have to worry about the prison. At the same time, they got to worry about their families. They got to worry about their homes. And a lot of times people lose sight of that. So approximately 50% of the staff, which is about 150 employees, they had significant damage to their houses, to no surprise. And with no communication available, some staff members were 2 to 3 days before they were able to contact their families. Wow, I couldn't imagine that. No inmates in the population lost immediate family members during the hurricane, but some staff actually lost family members during Katrina. One correctional officer had a son and a grandson who died during the storms, and they were in the Biloxi area. And Biloxi, y'all, is on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, very close to the Louisiana border. It's probably about maybe an hour from the Louisiana line, hour and a half. So a lot of people live in that area as well, or they have family that lives in that area, and Biloxi got hammered during Katrina. Now, in the immediate aftermath of that storm, the prison sent crews out and they started clearing the major roads. That's the first thing they're going to do, because not only do you want the roads to be passable, but you got to get emergency crews in there. You got to get electricity crews in there. And if the roads are impassable, they can't get in. So that's first priority. Major highways in the prison were also a top priority for the same reason. Crews of inmates supervised by staff worked around the clock until the next day, when there was no gas left for the chainsaws and there was no replacement chains left. Another thing you don't think of: in a storm, make sure you got replacement chains, because you can have all the gas in the world, but if the chain is dull, you're screwed. So some 200 inmate trustees, they worked in the community on cleanup tasks, and many of them alongside community volunteers. There were no problems with any of those inmates. But can you imagine, you're out there, you're volunteering, and you've got, you know, prisoners, and they're right next to you, and you're all cutting down trees and stuff. Two of the most persistent and serious problems in the days following the storm were fuel and water. WCI had ordered fuel prior to the storm, but it had not been delivered. There were no gasoline options available within the parish for employee vehicles, and the warden had clearance from Secretary Stadler to give gasoline to employees. You got 10 gallons per shift. But the problem quickly became the overall availability of gasoline. It just wasn't available, especially during Katrina. Warden Miller had every state vehicle parked and gave orders that none of the vehicles were to be used without his specific permission because of the fuel shortage. Eventually, fuel trucks were sent from other parts of the state, and the first fuel truck was being sent from the greater New Orleans area, and WCI sent five armed staff to escort the truck to the institution. That is pretty shocking. The gas was at such a shortage that you had to send armed employees to basically escort a gas truck, because it might get mugged on the side of the road and somebody steal that whole truck. That's how much of a premium gas was at that time. So the staff sent on this trip, they wore ballistic vests, and they took extra vests for the truck driver. How about that? You're driving the truck and these guys get out and they're armed and they're like, you might want to put this on. So the trip, which would normally be 2.5 hours or so each way, guess how long it took, y'all? 14 hours for a 2.5 hour trip each way. So normally 5 hours, took 14. That's unbelievable. WCI was without water for 2 to 3 days, and the situation had become critical. Staff took water out of ditches and poured it into toilets to see which toilets would flush if there were poured water immediately available. Initially, bottled water was used to provide drinking water for inmates. After a few days, they were able to arrange a potable water container from the National Guard. And while drinking water had become a potential crisis, the institution ended up isolated for weeks. And water for flushing toilets, water for showers, quickly became issues. Oh my gosh, you can't even flush the toilets. In one of the more creative initiatives during the whole crisis, Warden Miller went to a truck stop and found a trucker with a tractor trailer rig. The warden offered the trucker 20 gallons of diesel fuel in return for hooking up to an old milk tank trailer and pulling it into the prison compound. Warden Miller got non-potable water and a water storage truck from the fire department and used that water for flushing toilets and the milk storage trailer for water to take showers. Finally, the staff and inmate work crews were sent to cut fallen trees so that there was vehicle access to wells for the community water system. So outside the box thinking, right? We got to figure something out. No showers, no flushable toilets. Screw that. So the staff work hard to keep the inmate population well-informed, and that's important. You don't want to riot in there during this time. And if those inmates don't know what's going on, they'll start to panic, no doubt about it, especially when they don't have any water and they're thinking we're going to thirst to death in here. So Warden Miller told both groups that the institution was going back to normal programming as soon as possible. He felt it was helpful for both groups to try to normalize, and I would agree with that. The inmate population saw that the staff was devastated and understood that some staff had lost immediate family members, their homes, etc., and staff-inmate relations actually improved in the aftermath of the hurricane. And let's talk about that for a second. I'm sure that the inmates at that time, look, they're human beings, a lot of them anyway, and I'm sure they were like, man, they're in the same boat as we are, and a lot of these guys are here, and they're kind of taking care of us and making sure that we have water and coming up with all these ideas, and they got family members at home that they haven't even talked to, you know, and a little bit of, I don't know if I call it bonding, but sometimes during a crisis, you bond, even an inmate and a correctional officer, right? You're all in the same boat at that point. So the TV's cable system was down, not good. There was no television in the inmate dormitories, and Warden Miller took to taping CNN at his home each day, and then the staff would take the VCR, which, y'all, for those younger listeners, a VCR is you have a tape, it's a VHS tape, and you put it in there and it plays something. This is, they weren't streaming shit back then. So they took VHS tapes into each dormitory with this video cassette recorder, and they played 2 hours of news each day for the inmates. Genius idea, and pretty awesome of the warden to do that. Shout out to him. Now, once the phone service was restored, mental health staff talked to every inmate. Staff also got phone numbers for family from inmates. They got family, too, that probably lived in the general vicinity that they were concerned about, right? So they get phone numbers from the inmates, and they made contact wherever possible, and then they provided that information to the inmates. You couldn't actually talk to the family member, but, hey, if an inmate walked up and said, can you check on my son? You know, he lives 20 miles away. Here's his phone number. They would call and they would say, hey, this is, you know, a Washington Correctional Institute. Your dad's concerned about you. We just want to make sure you're okay. And then they would pass that message on to that person. So Warden Miller, he met almost daily with the Inmate Welfare Council, which was just a large number of inmates that volunteered to help in the prison and in the community. Trustees. A lot of them were trustees. Well, all of them, likely trustees. 2 days after Katrina hit, Washington Correctional Institute sent 11 inmates out to other prisons because of medical conditions. Another thing you wouldn't think about ahead of time. What about these guys that have serious medical issues? So the local hospital was not operational, and the prison wisely decided not to risk an inmate with a serious medical condition needing urgent care. So they went ahead and got them out of there as soon as possible. And they had a FEMA distribution center for the community, and it was located close by. But there were a number of problems with that distribution center, including road access and security for emergency supplies. Warden Miller offered to move the distribution center to the prison, and that offer was quickly accepted. Water, MREs, ice, among other supplies were distributed as the prison set up a drive-through system. And I got a lot of experience with this. Several storms coming through here, hurricanes, and also in the Great Flood of 2016, those drive-through systems played a key role in not only my family, but 3,000-something other families in the Denham Springs, Louisiana area that had feet of water in our homes. No food, no anything. I mean, it wasn't even a hurricane when that occurred. No one saw it coming. It just rained for 3 days straight, and we ended up with 46 inches of rain over a three-day time span. Imagine that. But FEMA had a drive-through system, and I would wait in that line for, you know, hours, and then I'd finally get, but I was thankful to get it. And then I'd finally drive through there, and they would put several boxes of MREs in my car, and that's what my family would eat until the grocery stores were back open and things of that nature. So they set up those drive-throughs. And the prison also served as a Red Cross distribution center for debit cards for residents entitled to financial assistance, which in an emergency like that, everybody's entitled. The arrangement worked so well and the community reaction was so positive that Warden Miller told other wardens prior to Hurricane Rita's landfall, remember that hurricane came shortly thereafter, that they should consider working with state officials to establish a community distribution center at their prison. So the Washington Correctional Institute employees not only helped staff FEMA distribution centers, they also hauled supplies to local churches and other community locations in need. It was clear to the consultants that were doing this report that in the aftermath of Katrina, the local community regarded Warden Miller as a hero, and the staff interviewed used the same term repeatedly. So not only did the public look at this warden as just a total hero, but even his own staff. Imagine the respect that he earned after this storm and the way that he handled it. Look, leaders lead. It's as simple as that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The lack of communications was, of course, identified by the warden and the staff as the biggest barrier during and after the storm. And that's no surprise. During an emergency situation, the last thing you want to not be able to do is communicate. You don't know what's going on in the outside world. So for the first few days, the only communication possible was that of a satellite phone that they had on staff. And it would be successful once in about every 30 calls. So they would keep trying that thing, and about 30 calls in, they would get through. They were able to let the state authorities know that they had a lot of damage at the prison, but not much outside of that. And believe it or not, they had no knowledge of the massive evacuation that Woody and I told you about with Orleans Parish Prison and Jefferson Parish Prison. And they weren't even aware of how other prisons in the state had fared during Katrina. They probably just assumed everybody got decimated, I'm sure. It was a matter of weeks before the Washington Correctional Institute actually became aware of the scope of the entire prison department's activities during that time. And Washington Correctional, it was fortunate to receive extraordinary assistance from other agencies. And let me tell you, when this stuff happens, correctional institutions from all over the country help you. They're all a family in the end. And the Pennsylvania State Department of Corrections, in an arrangement, sent 21 correctional officers and mental health staff as well to Washington Correctional Institute. And they worked alongside the staff in dormitories. They took inmate work crews out, and they were available day and night. They slept in barracks set up in the training academy, and all of these people were volunteers. They weren't being paid. How awesome is that? And it's worth noting that Pennsylvania had more volunteers than could be sent. They actually had more people want to come down here. They just didn't have the transportation to send them down here. And when they were not on duty at the institution, many of that staff helped WCI fix their own houses. Man, if that don't give you just a warm, fuzzy feeling in your chest, you ain't living. That's pretty freaking awesome. Now, the Pennsylvania staff, they stayed for approximately 2 weeks, and then they would cycle home, and another group would come back. And they did that for over a month. How about that? Donations arrived at the institution from Kentucky, Tennessee, Maryland, and even more jurisdictions. And in almost all cases, the donations were from corrections staff in other states. The Norfolk County Sheriff's Office in Massachusetts adopted WCI, and they collected money, and they actually sent a check for $21,000 that was specifically intended for the staff of that prison, and they divided that up evenly. That's pretty cool. At the same time, one of the consultants visited WCI that did this report that I'm going over with you now. And most of the staff seemed to be doing well, except there were many continuing to deal with substantial house damage and extraordinary storm-related expenses, right? All the things you have to rebuy. And Ward Miller suggested that the impact of Katrina would be felt for 10 to 25 years in that parish, perhaps forever, because the number of displaced New Orleans residents who may stay in what was a quiet rural community. And it, you know, looking back on it now, it's not as bad as they thought it would be 25 years later, or however many years it's been. But they were sure concerned about it at that time. And it did take a lot of time to recover. And even New Orleans, when it evacuated, when New Orleans evacuated after the levees broke, a lot of those people ended up in Houston, Texas, and they never moved back to New Orleans. So it affected their population greatly, but it's since come back now. It just takes a lot of time, y'all. So this report, it also covered its thoughts on the plans for mass evacuations in the future. So what happens if a Katrina happens again, right? And here's what they've came up with. Each institution should be responsible to have plans not only for on-site evacuations, like fire, for example, but also have off-site evacuations for the entire population. Those plans need to be thought out, detailed, and realistic. While that is a formidable planning task, it is a helpful exercise to staff and other aspects of emergency planning. They should also, meaning the Department of Prisons, should also identify which records must accompany an inmate during an evacuation. And that's a big one, a big lesson that they learned. Remember, I told you, there were a lot of inmates that went inside Louisiana State Penitentiary to Angola, and they came from Orleans Parish Prison, and nobody had any idea what these guys did. Maybe they were there for a traffic ticket. Maybe they were there because they killed 50 people. They had no idea. They didn't have any records on them. That's crazy, right? So the department should identify which records must accompany an inmate during an evacuation. Those will typically include a criminal history, current sentencing, and medical mental health records. Evacuation plans must include plans for dealing with special populations. Evacuation plans should include plans to identify inmate troublemakers during the evacuation. You know, kind of like in the old days of Angola with the red hat cell block, and these guys would wear hats with a red band around them, and that identified them as the worst of the worst prisoners. Maybe they need to come up with something like that, but not a hat, because they can pull that off, right? All department vehicles should be identified by large, easy-to-read, unique numbers on the side of the vehicle. Another thing that we talked about in past episodes that is very important. The department should have the capacity at each institution to take digital photos of inmates and evacuees brought to the institution, and then to back up those photos to other departmental locations by email. So what they're concerned with there is inmate H, for example. Let's just say he goes to Angola and he says he's someone he's not. At least they have a photo there that they can go through and figure out who this guy is. The department should determine whether there's any portable biometric identification system that is practical enough and inexpensive enough to be placed at each institution for identifying large numbers of incoming or evacuating inmates. It would also be important to know whether the portable biometric ID system could be transported to receiving institutional location. So you can see here that a lot in this report as far as things that we could do better and fix were with regard to identifying the inmates. Yeah, I'd say we would all agree with that. So the department should explore a color-coded heavy plastic bracelet system for the short-term identification of a large number of inmates. I don't know if that would work or not, y'all. I mean, is it a bracelet system where they can't break it off? If that's the case, it will work. But that was a suggestion. When the department is faced with evacuees at multiple locations or with large numbers of displaced inmates at one location, the department should identify an administrator in headquarters to coordinate all of this. You know, there's a saying that too many chiefs and not enough Indians. And that was probably pretty prevalent during especially during Katrina. There were probably a lot of people giving a lot of orders, and people were running in circles. The decision to release evacuees and arrestees only to their own families into shelters was an excellent decision that may have saved lives and may have averted some high-profile incidents in the community involving a former offender. Based on the department's experience, it would be worthwhile to try to establish guidelines with the Department of Social Services regarding the release of ex-offenders to their shelters. So if it's someone that's in there for a drug charge and you got to let people go because there's not enough room wherever you're evacuating them to, maybe you release them to a family member and say, hey, we'll be back in a week and we're going to pick this guy back up. You're not going to release a killer, obviously, or a rapist or somebody like that. But these nonviolent crimes, if you will, someone who's cheated on their taxes, I mean, let them go home for a week. Go pick them up next week. And what about hurricane preparations in advance? One of the things they suggested was identifying inmates, cleanup crews in advance. So after the storm passes is not the time to say, okay, we need all these inmates to clean up. Beforehand, identify who's going to do that and see if there's any volunteers, maybe. Towers should be demanned, and they're talking about gun towers, right? So you would think that would be common sense, but they have it in here. Yeah, if there's a Hurricane Katrina passing through, you don't want to be in a, you know, 10-foot gun tower.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
You're going to go bye-bye if you are, because they lost a lot of gun towers during that storm. High-velocity wind gusts can occur well before the center of the hurricane is close, and the risk to staff and towers is substantial. They wrote. A relocation area for prison vehicles should be predetermined. That location should not be close to buildings because, as what happened at WCI, HVAC units can blow off roofs and other heavy objects can blow off the buildings and smash the freaking vehicle, right? And it's gone. It's of no use at that point. Also, trees can fall on it, so you certainly don't want to park it next to trees. Then it goes on. It says in the parts of the country subject to hurricanes, just as parts of the country subject to earthquakes, the rule of thumb has been the staff should be prepared to be isolated and self-sufficient for a minimum of 72 hours, 3 days. Experience with Katrina and Rita suggests 5 to 7 days might be a more conservative estimate. Staff on serious chronic medication should keep 3 to 5 days supplies of it at work in their desk and in some other agreed-upon secure location. Staff with strong prescription lenses should keep backup pairs of glasses at work as well. And that's good advice. Emergency generators powered by natural gas rather than diesel fuel or gasoline have the potential to reduce the department's dependence on gasoline. Some states have a good history with natural gas emergency generators, and Louisiana is one of those. Even private citizens, especially nowadays, most of your generators that you buy new these days, they're multi-fuel. So you can run them off of gasoline or off of natural gas, like propane tanks. And I can tell you that's invaluable for a private citizen, because the lines at the gas stations after a storm, before a storm, whatever, especially before a storm, are insane at the gas station. And if it's coming and it's a big one like Katrina, you might as well wait. You be prepared to wait about 3 hours to fill up a 5-gallon gas can. It's ridiculous. Emergency supplies, they move on and they say food was not the most crucial commodity in the aftermath of Katrina. Drinking water, gasoline, and diesel fuel were all more crucial than food. Warden Kane and Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola have the right idea about emergency generators. More or better. Also, while all institutions have emergency generators that are fixed, large portable emergency generators can be valuable in an extended emergency. Absolutely. And that's what the private citizens rely on, but for the most part, just these generators on wheels. You plug, you can run a refrigerator and a few other things off of it. And these bigger generators, you can run your whole house off of it. And they're not generators that are permanent. They're on wheels, but they run 14,000 watts or whatever it is, and they'll power your whole home if you wire them in right. Emergency generators should also be tested on a regular schedule and run for a few minutes under load in sporadic times throughout the year. And it also notes, in the immediate aftermath of Katrina, gasoline became difficult and in most cases impossible for civilians to purchase in greater New Orleans. Secretary Stadler's quick decision to furnish gas to employees so that they could drive to work and back and perhaps get groceries and the like was an extremely important decision that may have avoided a substantial amount of employee absenteeism. However, the department has its own problems in securing a supply of gasoline at many locations. Many years ago, it was common for state departments of corrections to have large supplies of gasoline and diesel fuel in tanks, whether for transportation, operations, or other needs. But in recent years, for environmental reasons, there has been a move from large storage supplies of gasoline. That sucks. That's a horrible idea. With all these regulations, environmental regulations, sometimes they go against you as it relates to preparing for storms. You should always, these are prisons. I want you to have a ton of gas. You definitely don't want to run out of that. And then it goes through, y'all, some common sense stuff, talks about batteries and things like that. And then it kind of wraps up. And with that, we are going to wrap up this series. I know it's been a little bit longer series, but a lot of people, we've gotten a lot of emails from people that have found this very interesting. It's a report that's kind of hard to find out there. And when I located this, I knew it was something that many of you who have an interest in prisons, if you're listening to this podcast, you certainly do. Many of you who have an interest would find it interesting. And so that's why we brought it to you. But this is the last episode, and we'll start bringing you some other stuff next week on Bloody Angola. And just quickly, I want to thank all of you for listening. I also want to mention that we have those quarterly gifts for our warden team members on our Patreon page. We have those going out. I'm going to start shipping those out by Monday. So look forward to that. If you're a Patreon warden team member, you have to be that highest tier that we have on that Patreon, but we're going to start sending those out. And incidentally, I want to thank and appreciate, and I know Woody does too, all of our Patreon subscribers. You support the show, and without your support, we couldn't do this show. We just couldn't do it. It's just too expensive and requires too much time without the support of our Patreon members. So thank you. I want to thank everyone who has listened to us on Real Life Real Crime Daily. That's a real fun show where Woody and I talk about, you know, breaking news throughout the country, the headlines, right? And some of them that aren't necessarily the headlines. We tell you a lot of crime stories that you wouldn't know if you didn't listen to the show because they kind of get buried on page six sometimes. And so we talk a lot about that and hope y'all are appreciating Real Life Real Crime Daily and enjoying the content on that show. Of course, Woody has Real Life Real Crime Original, his original podcast, and that is every Saturday on the Real Life Real Crime feed. Of course, The Daily Show every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on the Real Life Real Crime feed. And I have my show. I have several shows, Local Leaders of Podcast, of course, which is just a podcast about local business in primarily in my area, the Baton Rouge area. And I let them come on the show and tell their whole story of business ownership. But it's pretty interesting, and they got a lot of good tips for all you business owners out there. You would enjoy that. And on the crime realm, of course, I have Exposed, Scandalous Files of the Elite. And just the last month, y'all, that podcast, so blessed to see that just boost through the roof as far as the ratings are concerned. Last time I checked, we actually reached 33 in the society and culture category. That's out of 106,000 podcasts. And we hit 33. And then in the overall podcast category on Apple Podcasts, and there's over 2 million podcasts on Apple Podcasts, we ranked 244, I believe, last time I checked. Just unbelievable, total blessing. And so it's a good sign that people are enjoying the content. And right now, Diddy is everywhere. Look, I was talking about Diddy on that podcast in February before anybody was talking about it. And so that has really taken off. I'm actually recording episode 10 of that today, and that'll be dropped tomorrow. I think I'm going to drop that one. Because there's some crazy shit come out about Diddy every day, really. But this 10th episode is the most unbelievable of all, in my opinion. So check that out if you're so inclined. And until next time, for Woody Overton, I'm Jim Chapman, your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, Gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.